Well, a few weeks ago, I'm going to dive right in because I got a lot to say today. A few weeks ago, we began our series called Reset. And, you know, I was thinking about this week. I think this is one of those series that is, is a great series for, maybe not for everyone, but probably for those who really are ready to go beyond just mundane, ordinary, average life. Really, and I think probably most of us here, we long to go beyond typical, don't we? I really do. I think most of us here, the reason you're here is either because, you know, maybe your wife dragged you here, or because there's something in you that longs to go beyond what's ordinary, that longs to go beyond what's just typical. I think that's probably most of us. And today I want to talk about something that I think this is especially true about, because it's an area of so many of our lives that so many of us struggle with. I want to talk today about our money. Money. Turn to the person next to you and say to them, money. That's right. Ask them, show me the money. Money, all right? I'm going to talk about money. I'm going to talk about De Niro stuff, things, bling, bling, our material possessions, all right? Now, this is an important topic. I understand it's a risky topic to talk about in church, but it's an important topic, so I'm going to take that risk. And I think that not only is it an important topic, but it's probably one of the most important topics, I should say, that we could talk about, because so many of us are really struggling with our finances. So many of us. You know, and for many of us, I think it's not even so much that there's not any money as much as it's that all the money we have is spoken for. Can you relate to that? Right? Or it's like there's more month than there is money, right? The month goes, right? For others, maybe it's debt. I heard, I did a little research this week. I think the average household credit card debt in America is about $11,000, like $10,700 or something like that. And then, of course, there are those who are upside down on mortgages. There are those who are, we could just go on down the list, couldn't we? It's an important topic. And see, but here's the deal. I think if we're really honest about this whole topic of money, I think that for most of us who are experiencing financial problems, okay, the problem, I think, has a lot less to do with the fact that there is low income, and probably much more to do with the fact that it's an issue of probably money management, how we're actually managing our money, right? For most of us, the issue is not low income. For some, maybe it is. But for most of us here in this room, the challenge falls right into that financial management category, which means, I think, if there's any area of our lives that we need to be willing to ask new questions in and to have discussions about and conversations about, I think it's this one, money, our finances. You know, and if you think about it, when it comes to our money should be a pretty simple area of life to ask questions about, right? I mean, it's the other areas of life that are tough, right? Areas like relationships and, you know, career, those things. I mean, tons of unpredictability in those areas. But when it comes to our money, for most of us, some of you are on commission, so your money goes kind of up and down or whatever. But for most of us, a certain amount comes in, and then, you know, you tell it what to do, right? So, I mean, really, questions ought to be easy to ask. In fact, I don't even think that it's that we're not asking questions. I think probably the problem is, just like we talked about with decision-making, perhaps we're asking the wrong questions, right? I think we ask some of the same types of questions that we ask when we make decisions, right? We ask questions like, okay, can I afford this? Right? Or is it on sale? Right? And we assume, well, if it's on sale, I should probably do it, right? Or how much can I borrow? The assumption is if I can make it work financially, I should make it work. Right? If I can get approved, I should get approved. Right? If I can borrow it, I should borrow it. Right? We think this way sometimes. I think we're asking the wrong questions. And I don't think it's because we are greedy. I really don't. I don't think it's because we don't care. I don't think it's because we don't want to do better. I think a lot of it has to do with how conditioned we've become by our culture to ask certain kind of questions, right? I mean, what we forget here I think we just need to be reminded of this from time to time. What we forget is that the people who we allow to shape our financial decisions typically are not all that concerned about how those decisions are being made. Right? Typically, right? And for the most part, okay, they're only concerned about how our financial decisions impact them. Right? I mean, if you haven't figured this out by now, all right, the only person looking out for your best interest financially is you. It's you. And your pastor. And really good Christian financial advisors, or just good financial advisors maybe, right? But for the most part, right, you're the one who's watching out for your finances, which means we need a new set of questions to ask. Now, a few weeks ago, we asked a question that went like this. What is the wise thing to do? Do you remember that one? What is the wise thing to do? Here's another form of that question that I think we can ask when it comes to our finances, all right? Here it is. Let me put it on the screens. In light of my past financial experience, my current financial picture, and my future financial hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing to do? In light of my past financial experience, my current financial position, and my future financial hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing to do? Now, there's a guy by the name of Ron Blue, who is a financial advisor. He's an author. I think he's written some books. And he points out that there are typically five things people do with their money. And he says there are these. Okay, I'll give them to you. We spend it. We repay debt. We pay taxes, hopefully. We save it, right? And we give it. Typically five things we do. We spend it, we repay debt, we pay taxes, we save it, we give it. Not necessarily in this order, although I will say that this is actually, I think, how most people probably do prioritize the use of their money, right? First we spend, then we repay debt, and then we're forced to pay taxes, right? And then if there's any left over, we try to save some, and occasionally we reach into our wallets and we give some away. Now, some of us might be a little more intentional about those last two, okay? But if you're like most people, you save and you give what's left over, right? That's typical. That's normal. Well, interestingly enough, one of the things you discover when you open the scriptures is that this topic of money is a topic that Jesus actually had a lot to say about. That's right. Jesus talked a lot about our money. And specifically, he talked about the prioritization of our money, the priority in which we ought to use and how we ought to use our money. In fact, there's one place in particular where he does this so clearly. I want to show it to you. It's in the New Testament book of Matthew. Matthew's the first book in the New Testament. Can anyone guess who wrote the book of Matthew? Matthew. Okay. You feel educated. Matthew, and I want to show what Jesus does here is I'll take this off because I'm hot. What Jesus does here is he describes how we as Christians ought to think about and respond to the world around us. And in some ways, it's even as you read it, you read it and kind of go, okay, this is a little bit unrealistic. Maybe even impractical on some levels, okay? But if you believe that Jesus is who he said he was, then it actually makes perfect sense, all right? Let me show you what I'm talking about. Matthew chapter 6, verse 25, all right? Jesus speaking. He says this, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life?" Verse 28, "Why do you worry about your clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire or frozen, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith?" So, Jesus is okay. So with all that said, so Do not worry. Do not worry. Saying, what shall we eat? Or what shall we drink? Or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things. And your heavenly Father knows that you need them. And here's the big one, verse 33. But seek first. In fact, can we read it together? Ready? But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. That's a beautiful passage, isn't it? Very promising, very comforting. I think we can all relate to it because I think we all understand what need feels like, what need looks like. Right? I mean, sometimes we get our wants and our needs confused, but we understand need, right? I mean, and the problem actually isn't that we need things. You understand that's not a problem, all right? Here's the problem. The problem is the priority that we tend to place on the things that we need. All right, the problem is the priority we tend to place on meeting those needs. Because here's what often happens. Often what happens is our concern of having our needs met leads us to do what? To do what Jesus just said, leads us to worry, right? Anyone ever worry once in a while, right? Yeah, don't look at me like that. You worry, I worry. We worry. Sometimes we worry, right? And so we worry, and then when we worry, do you know, as a Christian, what worry shows you, especially if you're staying in that place of worry, sometimes you fall into worry and you got to rebound. But if you're not rebounding from worry, that is a sign that you're just not trusting and you're not having the kind of faith that Jesus would desire that you have. And then the thing is, when we don't trust, well, then what happens? Well, when we don't trust, then we tend to allow our worry to dictate our priorities. And suddenly, what we do is we end up putting, well, we tend to focus first on our wants, our needs, our wishes, and we focus last on God's kingdom. We focus last on God's priority. And Jesus says very clearly, he says, look, that's the wrong order. That's not how you ought to look at it. Jesus said, look, seek first God's kingdom. Okay, in other words, don't make your first priority about your things or your thingdom. Jesus says, make it about my kingdom. Okay, make God's priority your priorities. And the promise is that all these things will be added to you, okay? All these things will be given. All the things what? Well, all the things we worry about. The thing, what are you going to eat, live, where, I'm going to pay this bill or whatever. Jesus, trust me, they'll be taken care of. And so, with that in mind, imagine for a second what might happen if you were to take that list that we just looked at, the typical way that most of us prioritize our money. Imagine what would happen if you were to take that list and you were to push the reset button and you were to flip that list upside down. Imagine that. I mean, what if instead of spending first, we actually spent last? Okay, what if instead of giving last, we gave first? We made generosity. We said, generosity is going to be my number one priority. Let's talk about this, okay? Let's talk about a few of these, all right? First of all, what if instead of spending first, we were to give first, all right? Give first. Would you say that with me? Ready? Give first. Give first. Now, we would all agree, I know this, all of us would agree that giving is good. Being generous is good. It's healthy. We all respect generosity, don't we? We see generosity in people. We respect it. And generosity is absolutely the best way to live our lives. And it is great motivation and great reason to make it a priority. There's many motivations and reasons. But here's the thing. As Christians, all right, as Christians, there is, I believe, not even I, but it's not my opinion, but as Christians, there is an even greater reason why putting God first in the area of our finances is so important. And that has to do with the fact that since the beginning of time, this is exactly how God's people honored, recognized, and declared that everything they had in life came from God and belonged to God. In fact, I mean, it's really a pattern that you see in the scriptures. You know, you see Adam and Eve, they're in the garden, all right? God puts them there. He says, hey, enjoy it, hang out, be naked, and, you know, and cultivate it and everything else, all right? But, come here. But, all right, you see that tree over there? All right, don't touch that tree. All right, and here's the deal. By refusing to touch that tree, what you're actually doing is you are saying that you remember and that you recognize who all this belongs to. All right, you are honoring, you are declaring and understanding that all this, you can enjoy it, you can have a great time, but you must remember that it came from me and it belongs to me. It is not yours. You are not the owners, you are the managers. Don't forget where it came from. Don't forget who it belongs to. And the way you'll show me is by honoring me. Stay away from that tree. And from that point on, we see the same pattern over and over and over again. The writer of Proverbs, he says it this way: honor the Lord with your wealth and with the what? What's the two words? Best part of everything your land produces. Then he will fill your barns with grain and your vats will overflow with the finest wine. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part. See, this echoes, right, what we just saw Jesus say, right? It's this pattern. It's this rhythm we see in the scriptures. First things first. Well, why is that? I mean, why does Jesus ask for our first? Especially in this area of money. Well, I think there's a great reason for that. And it comes from something else Jesus once said about money. Now, you understand that there's a lot of places in the scriptures where Jesus says things, and you hear it, and you kind of go, what does that mean? Right? And that's exactly what Jesus wanted you to do, right? He was increasing your appetite, right? There was a lot of very paradoxical things about what Jesus would say that went totally against the grain of what we would think. But then there's definitely other times when what he said was like, black and white. I mean, you know, very plain, very simple, okay? And one of those places is this one I want to show you, and it's just a few verses actually over above where we just read a few minutes ago. But Jesus says this in the context of our money, our material possessions. This is it right here. You ready? Matthew 6:21. Let's read it together. Ready? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. What does that mean? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. If it were modern day translation, what would it say? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Okay, in other words, your heart follows your money, right? Your heart always follows your money, and we know that. Look, if you poured every last dime and your whole life savings into the latest and greatest stock offering, okay, you better believe, I promise you, you will find yourself extremely interested in that company. You may have no idea what they do, but I'll tell you what, the minute you drop a bunch of money into them, guess what? You're going to suddenly be very interested, right? You're going to be very passionate and interested in knowing how that company is doing. And if the CEO of that company starts getting ill, what are you going to do? You're going to send him a box of Kleenex and some antibiotics, and you're going to FedEx that to him because you don't want anything to happen to that guy, right? Why? Because your heart just got engaged with three little letters on your computer screen. Why is that? Well, because where your treasure goes, your heart goes, your attention goes, your devotion follows it. Listen, God cares deeply about this area of our lives. He cares about our money. All right? And here's the thing. It's not that God needs our money. Okay? Just to be really clear here. God is not hurting financially. You understand that? God does not need to be bailed out. Right? Okay? God does not need your money. But what God does need, what God does want, is your heart. And God knows that if he is the priority in your life, if he has the priority in your finances, okay, and he knows that since your heart follows your money, if he has your money, he will have your heart. Why? Because where your treasure is, your heart will be also. Listen, if that's true, okay, and can I just tell you what I see as a pastor, all right? What I see is that for most people, this area of their finances is usually one of the very last areas that people tend to surrender to God. God, you can have my mind. God, you can have my wife even. God, you can have my children until they're 20, right? But you want my finances? What? One of the last areas that people, in fact, some people live their entire lives and never surrender that area to God. My question, though, is this. What if instead of making that the last area that you surrender to God, what might happen if it actually became one of the first areas you surrender to God? Can you imagine? I mean, if what Jesus said is true, can you imagine how that would trickle down and impact literally every other part of your life? You know what this points to? It points very simply to the fact that money is a very spiritual issue. We don't like to admit that, but it is, right? You pray about your money, don't you? I mean, if you woke up tomorrow morning and you found that all your money's gone, you're going to pray, right? You would pray, wouldn't you? God, help me. God, provide for me, Lord. Lord, you start going Southern Baptist, Pentecostal in your prayers, right? And you might even find yourself bargaining with God, right? God, I swear that, you know, oh God, I just want to surrender it all to you. Just take it, Lord. I give it to you. All of it is yours. And God's like, well, you don't have anything now. You don't have anything. I know, but that's why I'm surrendering it to you now. Because it's easy now, isn't it, right? Except now there's nothing but bad debt and, you know, all the results of my bad spending decisions and maybe things that I wasn't responsible for, I had no control over, whatever, but I'm just surrender it all to you, God. And God is saying, wow, that's quite a sacrifice. No, God's not going to. You know what God's going to say? He's going to say, of course I'll help you. Of course. It's not too late. It's never too late. Of course I care. Okay, but why didn't you do that when things were good? Well, because things were good. See, the bottom line is, okay, our money and how we use our money is a very spiritual issue. And see, that's why every weekend, okay, what you witnessed a few minutes ago, when we take time out to give, that is a very, very important part of our worship. All right, you must not see that as simply, well, this is what we do so the church can keep the lights on for next weekend. All right, you have to see, it's a very significant part. I mean, there's a reason we call it giving back to God. We call it giving back to God because we believe that again, as Christians, we believe that everything we have comes from God and belongs to God. So when we give to him, we're not giving him anything new. We're giving back a portion as a way of saying what? As a way of saying, you know what? Well, and you're doing the same thing that Christians have done for thousands. I mean, people have done, followers of God, God's people have done for thousands and thousands of years. You are declaring and you're saying, everything I have comes from God. Everything I have belongs to God. And God, I want you to know that I trust you and that I declare that you are the source of my life. And I don't know about you, but if there's any time in our time, in our lifetime, that we need to be secure in God as our source, it is right now. It's a powerful thing that happens. That's why the principle of tithing is, I think, so powerful, okay? And see, in the Old Testament, it was law. 10%, you tithe, period, right? Well, it's not law today. It's not law, but I will say that it's a good principle. It's a good starting point. It's a systematic and a consistent way of putting God first. Jesus affirmed tithing. But then you know what he did? He kicked it out of the ballpark. He said, all right, tithing, it's good, but let me tell you what I'm about. I'm about radical generosity. All right, so don't get too comfortable at that 10% mark. I mean, I want to go way, way beyond that. Because, man, that's where real life is found, isn't it? Generosity. I mean, look. Proverbs 11:24, it says, the world of the generous gets what? Larger and larger. Well, it shouldn't work that way, right? I mean, it ought to be that the more you keep to yourself, the more you have. But this is saying something totally different, right? The world of the generous gets larger and larger. The world of the stingy gets smaller and smaller. Have you ever noticed how generous people, man, their hands are always open, but they are never empty? Generosity. Listen, if you're new to following Jesus, I want to encourage you and challenge you to make this a priority in your life. If you're not new to following Jesus, but you just haven't taken that step, I want to encourage you and challenge you to take a step in that direction. So, listen, let me move on. What if giving became our first priority? And then what if our second priority became to save it? Would you say that with me? Save it. What if instead of waiting, okay, instead of waiting until all the conditions were perfect or until all your bills were paid and you were completely debt-free or for the perfect timing and all the stars aligned, what if the second thing you did each month was to save? And I don't even mean, like, maybe it's not time for you to save for your retirement or your kid's college, whatever. But I mean, what if you just set aside a little bit so that you have even an emergency fund? So if something happens, car breaks down, you don't end up going back into debt again. Right? So what if the second thing you did was you were to save it? See, here's the good thing about saving, all right? When you put your money into savings, you know what you're doing in essence? You are taking your money out of circulation, right? You're making it more difficult to get to it. And that is a very good thing for us, right? Huh? Are you with me? That's a very good thing. We need that, all right? And here's the other thing. When we save money, what saving does is it teaches us how to live on a margin. It also teaches us how to be content, right? Because here's the thing, we don't just say, well, I'm just gonna be content from now on. No, you don't just say that, right? No, we learn how to be content by living on a margin. That's how we live contentment. And then after giving and saving, what if the third thing you did with your money was you were to use it to repay debt? Now here's the thing, not all debt is necessarily bad debt, right? But their most consumer debt is bad debt. How many of you hate debt? Listen, how many of you hate dumb debt? You know what dumb debt is? Dumb debt is debt on items that weren't worth the price you paid once you walked out of the store with it or you drove off the lot with it. Right? Dumb debt is when the interest you pay on an item translates into having paid 10 or 20% more than the original price. Dumb debt, right? And you know where the majority of dumb debt comes from? It comes from those things that are in your wallet called credit cards. Plastic piranhas, right? Credit cards, man. And not saying credit cards are necessarily bad. They can be useful, but more often than not, credit cards are a real problem. I mean, listen, okay, those of you who are, in your late teens, your early 20s, listen to me because I learned this the hard way, all right? Be careful. All right, let me just give you an example. Let's just say you owed $8,500 on your credit card. All right, and let's just say if you were to make just the minimum payment on that credit card, all right, on that debt, if you were just to make the minimum payment, let's say what percent? I don't know, 18%? That's probably being conservative because if you're young, you probably don't have a lot of credit rate history, so you get a little whatever. But let's say 18%. Do you know how long it would take you to pay off that credit card if you were just paying the bare minimum? It would take you 25 years and $24,000. To pay that debt of $8,500. Dumb debt. Dumb debt. Turn to the person next to you. Say, dumb debt. Dumb debt. And by the way, will you pay for my debt? Ask him. It can't hurt. No, you know what that's called? It's not dumb. It's not just dumb. You know what it is? It's called bondage. It's bondage, isn't it? Listen. Proverbs 22:7, the borrower is servant to the lender. Do you know that is so true, isn't it? Have you ever felt that? I have. Listen, you know what I think the most frustrating part about being in debt is, honestly? It is the fact that you can't be as generous as you'd like to be. You know what I mean? It's like opportunities come up, and you hear about opportunities to help with this, or you know maybe there's a young person or person who's going to go on a mission trip somewhere, or you know an opportunity to invest in someone's project that you believe in, or whatever it might be. It's like we have the compassion thing here with sponsoring the kids, and I mean you hear about those opportunities. The worst thing in the world is when you really want to do it and your heart is totally being pulled by it, and you know it'd be something awesome to be a part of, but you can't because you're in debt. See, that's why we talk about these things. Because we believe there's hope, and we believe there's freedom. And that's why even in a few weeks, we're going to be starting this class, Financial Peace University. And if you find yourself in a place financially right now and you need help, go to that class, all right? Make an investment, all right? Many, many people here in the Orchard have taken that, have walked through that, and it has changed their lives. And it does cost. There's a $100 fee to the class, and you might go, wait a minute. Well, if I'm hurting financially, why would I? You know, no. This is an investment, man. It's an investment. And here's the thing. You know, if it's free, you know what you do with free. You do the same thing many people, most of us do with free, right? You don't take it as serious, right? So it's important that you make an investment. And here's the thing. We've had several people in our church who've said, you know, we'll provide scholarships. If there's people who can't afford it, we can meet them. You know, maybe we'll help them with half of it or a portion of it. But I would encourage you to, if you do get a scholarship, pay for part of it. Still make an investment. But if you want to take that class and you can't afford it, don't let that stop you. Talk to us, all right? And which means then also I need some of you to provide scholarships, all right? We had 3 or 4 last night, which was awesome. But that starts February 29th, and I would encourage you to take that step, all right? Now, that leaves us with one more. That's usually at the very top of the list, and that is spend it, okay? What if we took what's typically the first thing we do and we made it the last thing? Spend it. Say it with me, ready? Spend it. What if instead, listen, what if instead of giving God the leftovers, you and I gauge our spending on whatever is left over? See, now that's not necessarily the easy thing to do. But I will say to put spend it at the bottom of your list is probably the wise thing to do. And see, yet even when we do spend, we still got to be careful, right? We still have to use a great deal of wisdom when we spend. God cares about how we spend our money, right? I mean, just because we give a portion to him doesn't mean he doesn't care about the rest of it. He cares, right? So instead of asking questions like, well, what can I do? Or, you know, maybe it's what should I do? Right? Or instead of asking, okay, can I afford it? Maybe the question ought to be, should I afford it? Or instead of asking, can I lease it? Can I borrow it? The question ought to be, should I lease it? Should I borrow it? Right? Just ask why, right? Ask why before you buy. Why? Is it to make me feel better about myself? Uh-oh. Is it why? Why? Or bring the big question in, all right? Let's put it up again. In light of my past financial experience, my current financial picture, my future financial hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing to do? What is the wise thing to do? And all of that leaves us with one last question, which is this. What's next? That's for you. What's next? All right, is it time to reset some priorities? Is it time to say yes to putting God first? Now, see, there's a reason I spend the majority of my time talking about the first one. Give it, all right? And that's because that is where it all begins, putting God first. You don't need a big teaching on how to spend, right? But, man, we need to hear. We need to hear what God says about putting him first. Man, because that's where the freedom comes in. Let me tell you something. While there are a lot of places you can invest your money in, and there's even good places to invest your money in, all right? No place compares to making the priority of your investment in those things that are eternal. And that's why Jesus said this. He, right before he said where your heart and your money are connected, he said this. Do not lay up for yourselves. Matthew 6:19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Do you see the context there? So what does that look like? I mean, don't lay up treasures on earth, treasures, what does that look like? Well, instead of explaining it, let me read you an email. It's an email I received a while back that came to mind this weekend that you'll see where I'm going with it, but the email said this. Dear Scott, recently during announcements, you mentioned the mission of the Orchard. Whenever I hear this, I find myself nodding my head in agreement. I hear it and I say to myself, yep, That's our mission, all right? A couple years ago, my granddaughter Summer was born at only 29 weeks of pregnancy. She weighed just 2 pounds, and she was born with a small abnormality that led doctors to tell us that she would not develop like other children. Well, it turns out that Summer has been God's miracle. They said that she would be blind, but she sees. They said she wouldn't grow physically like she should, and yet today she's at the 75th percentile in weight and height. And her brain abnormality has not affected her at all. She is just a normal little girl. Well, as you may have heard, just after Christmas, we found ourselves facing a very sudden tragedy with Summer that played out over 9 horrific days in the hospital. During that time, watching what Summer had to endure, and then on top of that, watching my daughter endure the pain of having to watch her child suffer was almost beyond reality for me. I've had so many moments in my spiritual life when I would watch other Christians go through some horrific times, and I've always wondered if I could go through a tragedy and keep on praising, let alone believing in God. Well, during those 9 days, I found myself in almost constant prayer. And guess what? I also found peace in those prayers. There were times when an uplifting song would fill my mind, and again, I found peace in singing those songs to Summer. I would search my mind for the scriptures that I've heard over and over again, and I would always find peace and hope in them as well. Once, during those 9 weeks, a procedure went terribly wrong with Summer. She stopped breathing, and her little heart stopped beating. And yet, even then, in that moment, I felt my own heart beating, thanking God, because I knew that He was present and in control no matter what the outcome would be. God carried me through those 9 days and has continued as we've slowly adjusted to Summer's new normal. So all that to say that when you spoke the mission last night, I caught myself reciting it with you and nodding my head, and I stopped so heavy with the realization that our mission isn't just a bunch of words we speak or activities we do for others, but it is a living, breathing testimony of what is possible in my life. And what's possible for everyone who walks through these doors, and even for those who we just simply connect with in our own lives. I have been so blessed. And I'm committed to honoring our mission and to never take it for granted. To worship God for the possibilities, the gifts, the blessings, and yes, even the tragedies. Thank you for leading the orchard and pouring your life into the mission. Thank you for the sacrifices I know you've made as a leader. Thank you for teaching me to trust and to thank God in all things. So you might ask, well, what does that have to do with putting God first? The answer to that is everything. Because here's what you need to know. Your giving to God's work is not just about what happens in you. It's not just about your freedom. It's also about the people that God is drawing here every single time these doors are open. Some of you, today is your first time, and you felt that drawing. You're not even sure what that was. But I'll tell you what it's about. It's about those who walk through our doors, and they're walking in here with defenses up. They have no idea what to expect. They have uncertainty in their lives. They're hurting. They're confused. And yet they're going to walk into this place, and they're going to find a place that says to them, you know what? It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you're at in your spiritual journey. It doesn't matter what kind of mess your life is in right now. This place is a place where you will be loved, where you'll be accepted, and this is a place that believes that your story matters, period. And I'll tell you, that kind of place could not exist if it wasn't for a whole bunch of you who have surrendered and said yes to putting God first in the area of your finances. There is no way I can talk about this and not say this to you, because here's the thing, because of your generosity, because of you saying yes, this place, okay, this mission, God's work is happening. It's happening. And there are eternal shifts that are happening in people's lives because of it. And so I want to say thank you. As your pastor, thank you. on behalf of those who are walking through these doors, on behalf of those who are here today that would not have stayed here if there wasn't the kind of environment we have here, I want to say thank you, because everything you're doing is making a huge difference. I want to close with one last passage, and it's a beautiful vision of what God can do with a community of people who really embrace this. In fact, it's a picture that's painted for us in Acts 4, and I think it's probably one of the most beautiful accounts found anywhere in the Scriptures. And you've heard me share this before, but I want to share it again before we leave. Acts 4, verse 32, this is the picture. All the believers were united in heart and mind. And they felt that what they owned was not their own, so they shared everything they had. The apostles testified powerfully to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's great blessing was upon them all. There were no needy people among them, because those who owned land or houses would sell them and bring the money to the apostles to give to those in need. Wow. Beautiful. Beautiful picture. Believers who are united in heart, in mind, who understood that everything they had been given came to them from God and belonged to God. And because of that, there was an amazing, I don't even know what you call it, but an amazing spirit of generosity that flowed through them to one another and to the world around them. And can I tell you something, Orchard? I don't believe that this is just an account that's put in the Scriptures for us to look at and say, well, that was a nice story, and wow, there's some nice inspiration in there. No, listen. I believe it's a picture of what a community, even like this one, could look like even today when those of us who are part of it are willing to say yes to God, and who are willing to trust and to have the faith to surrender and to make God's priorities our priorities. Is it easy? No. But who told you that this whole thing of following Jesus would be easy? Right? But with God's help, it's possible. I have a friend who's a pastor, and he was telling me the other day, a while back, I guess I should say, that about a guy in his church who was really struggling with this. He was just so torn and finally got so tired of being torn back and forth. On one hand, he wanted so bad to surrender and to say yes to God, but on the other hand, he was so pulled in by desire and worry and acquisition. And so finally, one day, he sat down at his desk and he took out a small piece of paper and he literally wrote everything down on that list. He wrote down his money, his salary, his income, his house, his cars, his clothes, and he said, God, I am deeding it over to you. And he literally wrote this down. He said, God, you are the owner, and from this day forward, it's not mine. It's yours. I am the manager. You are the owner. And he took that piece of paper, and he folded it up, and he put it in his wallet, and he kept that paper in his wallet until the day he died. And that pastor, he talked about how after he died, everybody who knew him knew about that piece of paper in his wallet, because he would take it out and he would show it to him. And everybody who knew him, they said the same thing. They talked about how that moment in his life changed everything for him and led him into the most beautiful freedom they had ever seen in his life before. Orchard, I want that for you. And I'll tell you, God wants that for you. So the question is, what's next? Would you bow your heads with me? And let's ask God to give us the courage to take the steps he's calling us to take. Just as you sit, and I know I've gone over today a little bit, but it's okay. But as you sit in your chair with your eyes closed, your head down even, Here's the thing. If you need to settle that surrender issue, this is such a good time to do that. What does that look like for you? I don't know. It's different for everyone, right? For some, it might be saying, all right, I've got to make some tweaks. I've got to reprioritize. For others of you, you might say, you know what? I can't go halfway, because if I go halfway, it won't happen. So I'm diving in. I need to be consistent. I need a systematic way of putting God first. So I'm going to try this tithing thing. I'm going to try, and I challenge you, try it for 3 months. See what happens. I'm not promising you return in money, but I will promise you that you will see. It's a decision you will never regret in your life. And if you don't start with 10%, start with 5%. But follow God. And either way, though, I challenge you today, every one of you, to make God's kingdom your first priority and watch what happens. Heavenly Father, as best we can, we make you, with your help, we make you the Lord over every part of our lives, including our financial lives. And God, would you keep working at our hearts, and would you keep gnawing away at us until you bring us into that freedom that comes when we say yes and we surrender. We are so grateful for the generosity that you have shown us by sending the gift of your son Jesus, who, though he was rich, the scriptures say, yet for our sakes he became poor so that through him we might be made rich. And I don't think, God, that you're saying that Jesus became poor so that we can be wealthy and have a nice car, nice house, all that stuff, whatever. I think, God, there's something so much greater in this richness that you talk to us about. There's a richness of soul, a richness of heart. And so I pray that you would give us courage today to say yes to you. And for those here in our community who are hurting financially, there's some here that need a breakthrough in their lives. I pray today they would leave here today with a sense of hope and an understanding that it's not too late to call out to you for help. Thank you for what you're doing in our hearts. Thank you for what you're doing in this community. We are thankful to be a part of a place where your spirit is doing the amazing things that we see happening around here. Thank you for that privilege and that opportunity. We pray that, and we ask that together as your people now. And everyone said, amen.